Welcome to Money, Markets and Masterminds, a CityWire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment and strategic decision making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor looking for insights, analysis and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uyster. Today, we're diving into the world of responsible investing, a topic that's becoming increasingly important for trustees, investors and charitable institutions alike. And with good reason, the impact of how and where money is invested can shape our environment, society, and even the economy at large. ESG is evolving rapidly. What started as a niche investment strategy has now become mainstream, driven by increasing demands for businesses and institutions to be responsible stewards of the planet and its people. But this shift comes with its challenges, especially when it comes to managing money, which brings complication into the equation. However, I found a simple and suitable framework to dig into the topic, and for me, it made a bit more sense now. It is an Investec Wealth and Investment International Initiative, a free-to-download ESG and Responsible Investing Guidebook designed to help journalists like me, trustees and investors to understand the importance of sustainability and responsible investment. But I wanted to dig deeper than that and understand how this all fits into portfolio management. I thus invited Barry Shamley, a fund manager at Investec Investment Management, into the studio today to provide some more context on how this all fits into their world of fund selection and asset allocation. Barry is a portfolio manager of the Investec BCI Dynamic Equity Fund, which he has managed since inception. His bio says that he's passionate about sustainability and was instrumental in the creation of the Investec Global Sustainable Equity Fund, of which he's also the co-manager. He's also a member of the Investec Group's ESG Executive Committee. Welcome, Barry.
Thank you, Ron.
Barry, responsible investing is much more than just picking a few companies that claim to be green in inverted commas. It's a framework that considers environmental, social, and governance, also known as ESG, into the decision-making process. Why is this especially crucial in today's world, where businesses are shifting from profit-driven models to those that consider broader stakeholder impact?
I think the world is evolving. As you know, we had the shareholder primacy doctrine. And what it can do is lead to extreme behavior. I think a way to think about it is revving a car at 8,000 and eventually that car is going to break. And it's a little bit like our planet and society. There are like limits, planetary limits and societal boundaries for sort of minimum equality and also boundaries for the planet in terms of how much we can extract for a period of time. And investors and stakeholders are getting more sophisticated in their ability to measure impacts that companies are having on society. There's an interesting study by Harvard, it's a department, impact-weighted accounts. And what they've started doing is quantifying the costs that companies have. So those negative costs that are a burden on society. So for example, a very simple example is the emissions and the cost that has on society in terms of potentially medical costs on the surrounding community, and then determining whether that company would still be profitable if those costs were levied back onto that company. So I think as markets evolve and data is easier to come by, more and more investors will start factoring these things into their valuations, and it will have an impact on returns on companies.
Barry, this can't be a one-size-fits-all approach, can it? How does Investec make it easier, an easier fit for investors, and assist fund selectors and trustees of pension funds to integrate it into their own investment decisions?
So I think what we've done, Boipelo Rabatat and Maxine Gray, created this wonderful guidebook, and it really is just a starting point. And what it does is it gives you the what, the why, and the how. Gives you a background on responsible investing, the evolution of responsible investing. One of my sort of favorite or most useful parts of it is the spectrum of responsible investing and understanding the sort of various degrees or phases of that spectrum and understanding where you would fit as an investor in that spectrum. And once you've sort of learned or understood what's in that guidebook, you can then take it further and dig deeper. And there are wonderful other resources out there like the PRI's website, which can help you further on that process. But this is just a sort of a one-stop shop where you can find all that information and set you on your journey.
That brings me back to the core of this responsible investing guidebook. And as you mentioned, Maxine Gray, which is one of the co-authors, she highlighted that trustees have a fiduciary responsibility to understand how their investments align with ESG principle. That means asking the right questions. But Barry, what are those questions?
Some of the questions could be, well, starting off would be, what is the ethos or objectives of the trust or the foundation? And considering the needs, well, certainly the financial needs of the beneficiaries, and then where you would sit on that spectrum of responsible investing. At your very left, you would certainly be, there would be no ESG integration. And then if you moved all the way across to the right, there would be impact investing where financial may be secondary. So you would probably find yourself somewhere in the middle, but just determining that, determining what is important for you as a foundation or as a charity, and an example of that may be somebody that a conservation fund, they would be more interested in biodiversity. So they would want to understand that in the context of their ESG integration. They would want a fund that was measuring biodiversity, or at least be aware of being owners of companies that were impacting the environment or biodiversity negatively.
Barry, the guidebook also emphasizes a model created by Popelo Robotata, which incorporates ESG considerations with a focus on dual impact. What exactly does that mean?
Simply what it means, it's an opportunity to give twice. So you give once through your disbursement. So you invest your money and then you maybe distribute a couple of percent a year. But there's also the potential to direct the capital that is it being invested into companies that are doing the right thing or potentially align with what you're trying to do. So, for instance, you could be investing in a renewable energy fund, could be one of the examples, or you could be buying green bonds instead of ordinary bonds within your asset allocation process. So I think it's that opportunity of using your capital twice, once for your disbursements, but once also with facilitating potentially energy transition or supporting companies that are doing the right things for environment and society.
Barry, let's get to your day job. Responsible investing is no longer just about avoiding certain companies or industries. It's about assessing risks and opportunities, ensuring long-term value, and aligning investment with institutional values. Can you describe the role ESG plays in your decision-making process?
Certainly. So we are evolving, and along with the rest of the industry, I think as we started off on our journey, the sort of primary way of integrating ESG was very much just looking at ESG risk rating scores. And that's not a bad starting point, particularly for an exclusionary process of trying to find companies that are doing it best. But as our understanding and as the industry evolved, so we've moved sort of from going to more bottom-up data, understanding what the companies are reporting on. So our process now starts with a governance overview. We start first, if that foundation is not there, then we don't even move along onto the quantitative or the financial aspects of the company. So you'll start with looking, is there board independence? Is the board suitably skilled? Are there correct remuneration policies in place? What is the constitution of the committees? Is there sufficient independence and skill on those various committees? And unfortunately, many management teams act as if they're the owners of the company and surround themselves with independent directors who are not that independent, who basically don't hold them to account. So once we're comfortable with that aspect of it, we then move on to a materiality assessment. We look at which ESG factors may be relevant for that particular company. And then if there are any that are potentially going to have an impact on cash flow or on the valuation down the line, we make those adjustments. And along the way, we may note, I mean, no company is perfect. We may pick up things. The last leg of our process would be potential engagement. If there were things that didn't really sort of stack up to 100% for us. So we wanted to buy it, but there were maybe 95 out of 100 or 90 out of 100. We would then move on to engaging with a company once we own it as well. Like it's, as I said, emphasizing that starting with governance now is crucial for us.
Barry, you mentioned quantitative factors. What data or ratings do you rely on to assess your ESG performance? And are there specific academic studies or frameworks that support this investment strategy?
So the data we rely on primarily is the disclosure from companies. Now, that is the most important thing because you can't measure what, well, you can't manage what you can't measure. So we're signatories to the CDP's non-disclosure campaign. And really what we're looking for is for companies to measure this data and then produce it in their sustainability report. So we'll look at things like workplace safety. We'll look at things like emissions, water usage, etc. We'll also use those scores that we spoke about. And going back, that SASB materiality matrix I spoke about, just ensuring we know what are the material ESG risks and opportunities for that particular sector. Each sector will have risks that are pertinent to it. And there is research out there. I think it was Kahn and Serafim. And really what that demonstrated, I think it was called First Evidence of Materiality. What that demonstrated is the value of focusing on material ESG sustainability factors. So the companies that focused on the right or the material ones actually did outperform over the long term. So it's fine to go and measure everything and report on everything and try and improve everything, but it's really focusing on the real material ones that makes the difference at the end of the day. You could be focusing on non-material ones and wasting your money.
Barry, are there any frameworks or global best practices you follow in your ESG strategy to ensure compliance with evolving international social development goals?
I think one of the most important frameworks is PRI, Principles for Responsible Investing. That's something we're a signatory to, and I think many asset managers and asset owners are signatories in South Africa. And what that does is you make a commitment to six principles. The most important is you integrate ESG. And everyone is at different points on their journey in that ESG integration. But I think importantly, you show your commitment to it and you start reporting on it. That is one of the other principles, is reporting on it. I mean, there are other very useful frameworks like TCFD in terms of company framework reporting options. The other framework we use for our Global Sustainable Fund is the Sustainable Development Goals. And those are 17 goals which are working towards a better world for all. And what our fund does is it screens a company's revenue and it screens their operations on each of those 17 goals, and it makes a net assessment on the company's impact overall. And this is a best-in-class mandate. So we're looking for companies that have the best net positive impact. We don't invest in anything that has a negative impact there. But just to reiterate, PRI, wonderful resource, and a lot of how-to manuals for asset owners and for asset managers if you want to go a little bit deeper than our guidebook.
Barry, at the beginning of this whole ESG strategy amongst money manager, the view was that it was being done for the greater good, not necessarily for the bottom line. But that kind of relationship has changed over the last year, where people who are responsible are actually making profits as well. What is your view on that?
Our view is, my belief, and I think it's a firm-wide belief, is that companies that are doing the right thing now will be the companies that are successful in the long term. So if you're a company that is being thoughtful about your emissions, that's being thoughtful about your energy consumption and your water usage, and investing now for the future, not only will you have consumers that will support your product, but you'll probably be your lowest cost producer, the most resilient, and have the least volatility in your future cash flow. So in my mind, there's no doubt. Obviously, you will go through cycles where commodity prices may change or market styles may not suit that particular framework. But certainly over the longer term, I have no doubt that companies that do the right thing will be the companies that are successful.
Barry, what trends do you see shaping the future of ESG investing? How are you preparing to adapt and sustain your strategy in response to these trends?
It's a rapidly evolving area. And I think just staying ahead of all of the regulatory developments, particularly abroad, I mean, what we're hoping for, there'll be some unification of reporting standards. So ISSB have this proposed S1 and S2 disclosure, which is your sustainability risks and opportunities and climate disclosures. That'll be for companies reporting. So I think that'll go a long way to some sort of unification. And then also fund classification. So in the EU now for UCITS, you have Article 6, 8, and 9. Article 6 is no ESG incorporation. Article 8 is ESG incorporation. Article 9 is promoting. So it's effectively sort of more sustainable type funds. In the UK, you've got SDR. So there are a lot of acronyms. There are a lot of different classifications globally. But ultimately, I think we need to get to a point where it makes it easier for investors to simplify and there aren't different sort of rules and frameworks in each of these markets. Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, as we wrap up today's episode, it's become clear that trustees, investors, and money managers hold significant power in shaping the future and contribute to a positive societal change. Maxine Gray said it best in the Investec Responsible Investing Guidebook on the custodians of capital, that they can give back twice, once through their investment strategy and again through their disbursements. The ESG and Responsible Investing Guidebook is available for free on the Investec website. Thank you, Barry, for joining us today. I found the conversation rather enlightening. To all our CityWire South African listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Money Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Yuesta, and my producer, Vera Loba da Silva, from the CityWire Studios team. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as the proudly South African iono.com. FM platform as well. Our recordings are also available on our website. So please go register and have a look at our wealth of multimedia content. And with that, and until next time, goodbye.